State Government Finance Committee will come to order. I'm going to be juggling a little with the agenda so that we're not stuck. So the first item on the agenda then, with cooperation of Ms. Hill. Thank you very much, Ms. Hill. I'm going to start with House File 143, Representative Purcell. And I will move that 143 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. And we have House File 143, as I said, was Representative Purcell's bill. And we have people in the audience that came to testify, and I want to make sure that everyone gets their chance to talk and be on record. And so Chair Visner, Chair of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe, and is here to start. Welcome to the committee, Chair Visner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you, McRitch, for this opportunity to speak on an issue that is very, very dear to the White Earth Nation of Ojibwe Indians and to, as well as all Native Americans, American Indians throughout the state of Minnesota and the country. In 2005, I was at the Veterans Affairs building and touring the grounds, and I saw this wonderful courtyard of plaques honoring veterans who have served our country. And at that time started the effort, the initiative, to secure a memorial for the American Indian veterans who have served our country courageously and honorably and bravely for way back to the Revolutionary War when we as American Indians were not yet citizens of the United States. We have served proportionately high compared to any other group in this country. Approximately 30% of all American Indians, men, women, and children, approximately 30% serve in the United States Armed Forces, serving this country for the values that we all cherish: freedom, our lands, and our people. And so to commemorate our American Indian veterans, and we have our American Indian veterans in the audience today. We have Tom Spry, who is the Tribal Veteran Service Officer from the White Earth Nation. We have Roger Aiken, Ron Valiant, Robert Durant. Did I miss anyone? These are veterans of wars. And so to commemorate the service, the great service that they have given to all of us, we ask that this committee pass our legislation and move it forward. With that, by the way, the tribes will pay the expenses for this memorial. McRitch.
Thank you very much. Representative Purcell, welcome to the committee again. I have moved your motion, or I presented the motion, and so we started with the testimonies to make sure that everybody got to speak, and we got back on time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and sorry we're running late off the floor there. I appreciate that we're having the time here.
The next person to testify is Blake Johnson, who is the son of Johnny Johnson, who is chair of the Prairie Island Dakota community. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and community members. My name is Blake Johnson. I'm the lobbyist for the Prairie Island Indian community. And as you said, my dad is Johnny Johnson, president of the Prairie Island Indian community. On behalf of the Prairie Island Indian community, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to testify on behalf of House File 143, a bill to authorize placement of a plaque on the Court of Honor of the Capitol grounds to honor American Indian veterans of Minnesota. The memorial plaque is an appropriate way to honor American Indian veterans who have honorably and bravely served the United States Armed Forces during both peacetime and wartime. We are the Middlewakanton Dakota tribe. It is our tradition and custom as Middlewakanton Dakota to honor men and women who have served in the United States Armed Forces. Veterans are honored during our ceremonies, including a color guard and honoring song during our powwow and during ceremonies on Memorial Day and Veterans Day. And we honor our veterans on plaques in our own community center. We honor and respect their service to our country and to our tribe. American Indians have served proudly during peacetime in every one of our nation's wars and conflicts. It's our proud tradition and one that deserves recognition in the Court of Honor. The tradition of military service by American Indians has been a part of our way of life for generations. At points in our tribal history, military services was one of the few opportunities available that offered our members a chance to get education, learning skills, and improve their lives and provide for their families. It is a proud tradition that continues today. A plaque in the Court of Honor will serve as a permanent memorial to honor our American Indian veterans and to recognize their service and sacrifice, along with the other veteran groups already honored in the Court of Honor. The American Indian veterans per capita has served this country more than any other ethnic group in history. These veterans, also some of the most decorated of the military veterans, have served in every branch of the armed forces. The plaque in the Court of Honor will help promote a better understanding of the involvement of American Indian veterans in the peacetime and wartime service and help convey a more positive, truer image of the American Indian veterans. Our tribe strongly supports House File 143, and we encourage your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Yep.
Chair Kevin Lisi, who is chair of Voiceport Band.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Lisi. I'm the chairman of the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa in northern Minnesota, as well as the chair of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. I'm here to support the amendment offered by Representative Purcell to put a plaque of honor for American Indian veterans. American Indian veterans, you've heard the statistics, have served more per capita than any other race in this country. They have a proud heritage of before the armed forces of serving this country. American Indian people have a unique relationship not only with the federal government, but they're also citizens of tribal governments and citizens of the state of Minnesota. Madam Chair, I think it would be an honor not only for tribes, but for the state to recognize the contributions of American Indian veterans, not only to our country, to our state, but to our tribes. Miigwech, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that came to testify in favor of House File 143? Okay, thank you. The committee is honored to have Chair Visner, Chair Lisi, and Mr. Johnson, the son of Chair Johnson, to come before us. We appreciate your commitment, and we recognize that your purpose is to honor those that have served all of us. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just say a couple of words here. I again apologize I wasn't able to be here at the outset, but I can only begin to tell you how proud I am to carry this, and I will look forward to having this plaque placed out there among the other plaques that honor veterans of our military service here in Minnesota. And I guess with that, Madam Chair, if I can renew the motion, are we ready to do that?
We're not quite ready to do that, because we would like Mr. Mandel to make a statement from the CAP board.
Okay.
Mr. Mandel.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Mandel, Principal Planner for the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. As the steward and guardian, if you will, of the Capitol grounds and dealing with memorials and the plaques on the Court of Honor and the Capitol building, I'm here today certainly not to speak against this proposal, nor necessarily in favor of it. We are simply, especially given the number of new members on the committee, we simply are informing you, as we do every time there is a new plaque in the Court of Honor, we are running out of space on the wall. We have 9 spots left for plaques in the Court of Honor as it currently exists. And we have had, I believe, 5 plaques added in the past 5 to 6 years. The most recently to the Spanish American Veterans Recognition. So it's just as a precautionary note to for you folks to be aware that we are running out of space, and if we start down the road, we have not yet honored the veterans who served in Iraq, in Kuwait, in Afghanistan, and we know those are certainly coming. So just wanted you to be aware of the situation, and it is a concern of ours that we continue to use up our precious space, but I certainly don't want this taken as testimony to be understood against this proposal. These veterans have earned this right, and we and the Veterans Affairs folks will work with them, as we always do, with the placement of the plaque, if that's your direction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mandel. I think, Representative Purcell, that you had great foresight in coming forward at this time. If this plaque is in the court, then there will still be remaining places for other initiatives. And as testimony from Chairwoman Visner and Chair Lisi, members of their community have served in every American war or incident from the beginning. And so it is quite timely at this time, in my opinion, Representative Purcell.
Madam Chair, we share that opinion.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Purcell, you know I'm a co-author. Many of the Republicans are co-authors of this, and we really appreciate you bringing this forward. And it's an important thing that we recognize all veterans from all backgrounds. And my philosophy is that veterans are veterans, and we really appreciate you and your group bringing this forward. Thank you.
Representative Purcell, you may restate my motion.
And thank you, Madam Chair.
I give it over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I may briefly, thank you, Representative Detmer, for your kind words. Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 143 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Go on to rules, Representative Purcell.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Next item on the agenda is Paul Erickson. We can do this in 7 minutes. No, oh, members, Ms. Hill has consented to come at another time, and so will you put the Indian Affairs Council's report into your saved pile?
I'm just gonna.
So we don't have to distribute that.
Thank you.
We jumped you up, Mr. Erickson, so maybe you can get on to promoting whatever you're going to promote and get some money for your commission and go forth and do your good, continue to do your good work. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. As you know, the Amateur Sports Commission does not have a reputation of being shy. We always have something exciting going and always some new projects. You're going to be handed out a report from the Amateur Sportsman. I'd like to just use that and go quickly through it. I know that you've got a time constraint today, so I'll try to be very concise and brief. I know there's a number of new members on the committee, and for your benefit, the Amateur Sports Commission was created in 1987 under Governor Rudy Perpich with a simple premise: use amateur sports as an economic development tool. And since that time, you'll notice in this book, we've built 11 premier or national quality facilities across the state. And the premise is this, that if you build a high quality facility and put quality programs, not only will it be a great recreational resource for Minnesotans, but it'll be of such value that people will come from all over the United States, in some cases the world, to participate in these facilities and these programs. You may not be aware that Minnesota hosts annually the largest amateur sport event in the United States. It's called the Schwann's USA Cup. It's held in Blaine at the National Sports Center. This event has 17,000 youth soccer players between 8 and 18. Half of them come from outside the state of Minnesota. So whenever you as the legislature has built one of these facilities, two good things happen. First, it creates great recreation opportunities for Minnesotans, and then secondly, it draws people in from out of state and sometimes out of the country, and it brings dollars into Minnesota. So if you page through your book, you'll see the agency mission. You can look at that at your leisure. I'd like you to refer to the page of the has the four graphs. Prior to 1987, when the Amateur Sports Commission was created, Minnesota gathered about $10 million of economic impact from amateur sporting events. Once we built our system of facilities and developed programs, we now achieve on average $70 million. And that is only counting the dollars that come and is spent from somebody from Iowa, Michigan, Norway coming into Minnesota. We do not count or register if someone travels from Rochester to play in a soccer tournament in Blaine, or somebody drives from Duluth and goes to the National Volleyball Center in Rochester. Those dollars are not counted. We only count out-of-state dollars. So you notice on the left that we're maintaining $70 million a year. The attendance at these 11 facilities is around $5 million a year. But I want to...
Excuse me.
Yes.
You were on page 8, right?
Page 8, yes.
Okay.
On the next page is, of our 11 facilities, the largest facility is the National Sports Center in Blaine. And that is the world's largest soccer complex with over 50 fields, world's largest ice arena. Now, I want to tell you something that has happened. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. At one point, the Amateur Sports Commission had 7 full-time staff. Today, we have 2.5 staff. What that has done is that our ability to help the statewide facilities is diminished. We have no... we used to have dollars to bid for events and to develop events. All we have is enough money now to cover the board expenses, the staff expenses, and even right now we have 3 staff, but half of one person's time is working for Hennepin County administering their grant program. In order to maintain that quality person, we've been creative in order to do that. But what it's done is that we focused most of the energy in Blaine because we're office there, and you notice that even through the recession, the economic impact from the National Sports Center continues to increase and that our attendance is increasing, whereas statewide, it's rather flat. And so that, and I need to report to you that trend will continue, because even now, for me driving down for Blaine, we have no agency money to do mileage reimbursement. So when I travel to Rochester or to Marshall, you know, we're doing it, one for the good cause. And so it just diminishes our ability to really a truly statewide agency. As you know, your vision was not to create the Metropolitan Amateur Sports Commission. It was the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. So I think we're just a little light on resource. For example, this book, the last time we did a report book to the legislature was in the year 2000, but we've had no budget. This book before you, we raised private dollars in order to print the state agency report book. And so we've been very creative, but it adds a little duress to not have, you know, the basic resources. Yes.
Representative Detmer has some really good ideas
okay.
on how to create a poster and sell those posters.
Okay. We're open to any good idea.
Stop by his office and look at the posters for fundraising activity. Okay. They're wonderful.
Okay. The next section that we're not going to spend time on, you can page through the facilities from the Bush Lake Ski Jump in Bloomington to the speed skating in Roseville, Minneapolis Sports Center, the Hockey Center in St. Cloud, Volleyball Center in Rochester, and so on. Then there's a whole section here on our grant programs. And we haven't had a grant program in recent years, but you'll see the record of all of the grants that have been administered over the years, and our agency was always committed under the direction of the legislature to spread those dollars statewide. And on pages 38 and 39, you'll see the impact of the agency in our Mighty Ducks, our Mighty Kicks, and our Mighty Kids grants really covered the entire state of Minnesota very well. I do need to mention there are some Mighty Ducks bills being introduced. We have two problems with Minnesota ice arenas right now. One is air quality. In the last 3 years, there's been children and families been gassed, lack of a better word. The air quality with propane Zambonis and older air handling equipment has caused some real problems. And so there was a bill championed by Representative Hansen that has helped to improve that situation. But there's a Mighty Ducks bill that would provide some modest grant money so a community could change their Zambonis over from propane to electric, which don't produce any harmful gases, and could improve their air handling equipment. There's also a problem with R22 Freon. Half of our arenas in Minnesota are using this old Freon, which the federal government has now banned. And so that these arenas, half of them, will all have to retrofit between now and the year 2020. And so this grant program would also provide some incentives for communities to switch over to the non-toxic coolants. So with that, Madam Chair, I tried to be brief, but the book will provide good background for members and let you know that there's some Mighty Ducks bills in the offing. But we appreciate the great support of this committee historically. And I want you to consider one thing in closing. You've seen tax collections and the business climate decrease over the last 4 or 5 years during what our greatest recession since the Great Depression. Amateur sports, if you look at our charts, is somewhat constant, that we didn't dip way down on our visitors. And I think it's because of this. Amateur sports economic development is somewhat recession resistant. I don't say it's recession proof, because imagine this. Your children or your grandchildren, can you imagine during tough times we're going to pull Susie out of figure skating and we're not going to go to those events because times are tough? I think people will invest in their children to the end, even through tough times. And so you'll see that this has been a great investment for Minnesota, and we maintain these good results even through tough economic times. So with that, I'll yield to questions.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Erickson, I've had the opportunity to coach several sports at the facility.
Great.
Wrestling, we had a big tournament there, and also soccer in the main stadium, and then track in the main stadium there, too.
Yep.
It's a wonderful facility, statewide facility, and I encourage any members that have not toured the facility or seen the facility, make sure you do so. I do have a question, though. As you know, what happened with the IOC this recently with taking wrestling out of the Olympics, is your organization going to come out with any statement on this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Denver, our board is planning to send a letter in protest to the U.S. Olympic Committee because wrestling is a huge sport in Minnesota. And I think it is one of the original Olympic sports that did take place in Greece at the turn of the century. So we think that would be a horrible decision.
Well, thank you. I know there's a couple legislators here, including myself, that have done a resolution for the House of Representatives. And again, I contacted, we've had several Minnesota athletes that have been part of the U.S. Olympic team, three to be exact, from the high school, Anoka High School, and Dan Chandler, I just spoke to the other day, a four-time Olympian, just got back from Cuba. He coaches the Greco-Roman team, and Cuba is really upset. Their main sport there is boxing and wrestling. And I guess there's a couple more meetings coming up, one in Russia, and the Russians and that Eastern Bloc of nations, Turkey. I toured the country of Turkey with a wrestling team, and I know that's their national sport is Greco-Roman wrestling. So I think we're going to see a real coming together of the sport of the different nations. So thank you.
Yep.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Erickson, I applaud the work that the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission does. Rochester has been a huge beneficiary of it, and we see literally thousands of people from all over the world, or all over the nation at least, that come to use the volleyball center that's been that's been built over the last number of years. In previous statements, you talked about the fact that you're down to about 2.5 people, and it's difficult to promote the system and the like. However, I think I'm aware of the fact that you have a foundation also. And could you maybe talk to the committee about how that's funded, what revenues flow in, how those monies are used, and if, in fact, over the last few years when we've seen a state maybe diminished funds, how the foundation has picked up some of that?
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chairman and Representative Benson, that is a very astute question, and it does, I think, highlight something about the Amateur Sports Commission that differentiates us from other state agencies. And I think it's the wisdom of the legislature. Of all our facilities, the legislature provided grants like the City of Roseville to build the speed skating, but we said in those agreements that the state is not responsible for the operating costs, and that's true with the volleyball. And so you have this system of 11 facilities. And there is the exception of the U of M Aquatic Center in St. Cloud because those are state facilities, but the other ones are all off the state operating budget, which so that when the state went into difficult times, it really didn't affect our facilities directly. Now, what the sports facility in Blaine is a state facility, but in the wisdom of the legislature in 1987, they created a nonprofit foundation to be the operator. And that facility has operated in the black without state subsidy since it opened its doors in 1990. And to my knowledge, Madam Chairman, I don't think there's another state facility that operates without state subsidy. And the operating budget of the National Sports Center is around $13 million a year. Now, the thing I didn't mention, in addition of the agency not having the money to reimburse for mileage, like, we're office there, and we pay no utilities. Our office equipment, our computers are all property of the National Sports Center. That nonprofit is wholly controlled by the Amateur Sports Commission, a state board. So that has also enabled the state to save money because of that arrangement. So now, is there enough extra proceeds to cover all of the costs of the Amateur Sports Commission? There was a study done by the Department of Administration several years ago, and they concluded that the answer is no. They are maintaining the facilities there, and they've been able to use money to keep the facility operating at a high level and doing its thing. So, I wish I could report to you that there was enough proceeds there that they could cover all of the costs of the agency, but I don't think that would be realistic. So anyway, I hope that answers your question.
Representative Benson.
Just one follow-up, and then that do they help in some capacity, though, knowing that, you know, that you have administrative costs, but do they help in some capacity? And I think I know the answer, but in the promoting of the activities.
Madam Chairman, Representative Bennett, yes. To create new events and to market and promote events, that's all on the foundation budget and not the state budget. So they have, I think, been a great saving in that way, too.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chair, I just wanted to put my comments on wrestling, which was, it was really unfortunate they canceled it right after they had finally added women's wrestling to the Olympics.
Absolutely.
Seeing no other questions, thank you very much. There's no changes from the governor's recommendations. The governor didn't add any money, right?
To my disappointment, yes.
Thank you for this overview. And if we have further questions, we'll contact you.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you. Ms. Jens. Ms. Jens is the Executive Director of the State Arts Board.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Sue Jens. It's my pleasure to be the Executive Director of the Arts Board. I have been in that position for 4 years. What I'm going to do today is give you a very brief overview of our agency and a little bit about what it does and how it does that work, and then also share with you what the governor has proposed for the 2014-15 general fund budget. We'll start with a little bit of background about the structure and the purpose of our agency. We are a non-cabinet level executive branch agency. You've got some, I love trivia. We were one of the first states to create an agency within state government to support and promote the arts. The current structure and the name that we have now has been in place since the late 1970s, and I see Representative Kahn has left the table. She was very instrumental in helping to create a regional arts council system that has now been in place for 35 years. Minnesota Statutes Chapter 129D tells us that our purpose is to stimulate and encourage the creation, performance, and appreciation of the arts in the state. It also outlines our responsibilities and our duties. And the first and most important thing that we do is to provide financial assistance for arts activities and programs all over the state. We have 11 board members who are appointed by the governor. They serve with the advice and the consent of the Senate. We have a staff of 18 FTE, and really one of the strengths of our process is that we use a significant amount of citizen involvement. We use about 250 to 300 volunteers per year who review applications for funding. They meet in open meetings, and they discuss those applications, and then they make recommendations to our board. So we it's not a few of us sitting in a small room deciding where the money goes. It really is a statewide citizen-driven process. I mentioned regional arts councils. We have a state agency, and then we also have this series of councils. You've got the map in front of you. When the system was created in the late 1970s, there was an arts program placed in each of the regional development commissions, which is why you see the boundaries are as they are. In the 30 years since then, those organizations have gotten bigger, they've gotten stronger, they've developed their capacity, and all of them now have separated in our independent nonprofit organizations. Their job really is to promote local arts development, help artists who are getting started in their careers, help arts organizations develop, encourage arts activities, performing arts series, arts centers throughout the state of Minnesota. And they have local decision making. Their boards are made up of people who represent those counties that are in each of the regions. And the recommendations don't have to come back to our board. They make the decisions at the local level. Our responsibility as their fiscal agent is to look at their two-year biennial plans and then to monitor their progress and their reports as the biennium goes by and make sure that the funding is being used in the ways that they intended it. We have one very simple purpose. We want all Minnesotans to benefit from participation in the arts, and that's a different thing to each person. For some of us, it might be going to an exhibit or a concert. For some, it might be acting in a community theater production or designing the sets for that production. For some, it might be taking ceramics classes or learning to write poetry at a community arts center. And even if we aren't a direct participant in the arts, there are economic, there are educational, and there are community benefits that we think all Minnesotans have a chance to share. In the back of your handouts, we gave you some 25-year documents that are more related to legacy funds, but we did provide those for you in case you have questions. Some people wonder why there is a state arts agency for the arts or why we're investing general fund dollars in the arts, and the short answer is because Minnesotans care about the arts. We think they're important for our quality of life. We think they're important to the way we educate our young people. And 75% of us attend some sort of arts activity each year. Now, that doesn't even count the number of people who sing in their local choir, who write poetry as a pastime, or are involved in the arts, or whose children are involved in the arts in other ways. So we know that Minnesotans really care about the arts. We'll segue into the biennial planning process. Those of you who have been through this process a number of times know that there was something that was a little different about the way we all planned this year, and that was that the state set up, I believe it was the governor's office and MMB and others, set up a set of statewide outcomes that we all are expected to meet. And each agency needed to define those outcomes that it thought it was helping the state achieve. And I wanted to talk very quickly about the three that we identified. We think that the arts help contribute to the state's thriving economy. As an industry, the nonprofit arts contribute $1 billion of economic activity each year, and that's direct expenses, related expenses, local and state tax revenue, and we have contributions to make to other industries. The second outcome we identified with is contributing to education and skills development. Each year, the College Board analyzes SAT scores, and they find that high school students who study the arts throughout their high school years perform better on SATs, at least 100 points better. We also know that that the arts promote creativity, imagination, innovation, and the IBM Institute for Business Value recently surveyed 1,500 CEOs nationwide, and those CEOs said that creativity is the most important competency that a business or an entrepreneur will need in the future if they want to be successful. So nurturing creativity is an important part of what someone learns through the arts. The last outcome we identified was contributing to strong and stable families and communities. The arts are intergenerational. You often see children, parents, grandparents going to a museum together or going to a play together. The arts help strengthen neighborhoods and communities, whether it's a district in the Twin Cities or whether it's a main street in Lanesboro or New York Mills or Fergus Falls. We see the arts being an anchor in redevelopment. And the arts are also an important way to bridge cultures. The songs, the stories, the dances, and the customs help us become a better united community. This is the slide of our general fund appropriations through the last 6 or 7 biennia. You'll see that our high water mark was in 2002. We were at about $25 million for that two-year period. We took a very significant hit. About a third of our budget was reduced in 2004, 2005, and quite frankly, we think that's what motivated a lot of people in the arts community to work hard to pass the Cultural Legacy Amendment. We gained some ground in 2008, 2009, and then our general fund budget has been decreasing since then. You'll see that. So the good news is that the governor has proposed stable funding for fiscal 14-15. He's proposing no changes, so it would be $15,012,000, which is what it is today. And I couldn't do a different color. I'm not very good with graphs. But the right-hand bar is what the governor has proposed for 14-15, so you'll see that those two bars are the same. I wanted to very briefly touch on what we do with those dollars, and then turn to any questions that you have. This is the way the 12-13 appropriation looks for general fund, and because the governor has proposed no changes, this is what he proposed for 14 and 15 as well. The regional arts councils would receive about $4.3 million of the appropriation, and they decide how to divide those dollars up. They come up with a formula amongst the 11 of them, and they decide how to share that $4.3 million. The Arts Board's, the $9.6 million you see that the Arts Board invests, go into two programs, two grant programs. They are core, they are really bread and butter programs that invest in Minnesota's creative people and creative organizations. So these are the two programs that we fund through general fund dollars. We provide operating support for arts organizations. It really is the lifeblood for the arts community, and those organizations are the backbone of the arts community. There are about 150 of them spread throughout the state of Minnesota. And its names you would recognize, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, the Guthrie, the Children's Theater, big organizations that serve a statewide audience. But it's also very small organizations that have a specific purpose, like VSA or Interact, that provide arts opportunities for people who have physical disabilities. It's organizations all over the state of Minnesota. It's the St. Francis Music Center in Little Falls. It's the Honors Choir of Southeast Minnesota in Rochester. It's the Paul Bunyan Playhouse in Bemidji. It's organizations in Lanesboro and Duluth and everywhere in between. So it's a big array of organizations. And there are two, as we've been meeting with you one-on-one, there are two that we see on everybody's list of organizations, and that's CLIMB and Compass, who provide residencies and programs in schools. I wanted to switch then over to what regional arts councils are doing with those general fund dollars. And each regional arts council defines its own programs and services, so it differs from region to region. But we see some commonalities, and these are the kinds of programs that are being funded with general fund dollars. Project grants or operating support might go to the Forest Lake Park Board for the Arts in the Park series, for the Barn Theater to present its current season. North Shore Players in Two Harbors used an arts project grant to bring the Missoula Children's Theater in to work with community youth on a project. Many of the regional arts councils will make very small grants to high school students for scholarships or to provide some funding so that they can work with a professional artist. And for some students, that really is a big difference in their decision to maybe pursue a career in the arts or maybe to just develop their own creative talents. And the other thing that regional arts councils do with those funds, because they, again, are focused on local arts development, they'll provide funding for consulting or training or organization development. So one example is an artist who lives in the Hopkins area who is a great recognized visual artist, but he works with youth at risk. And so if he needs a little bit of money to work with somebody on fundraising or work with somebody on project planning or board development as he creates his arts organization, he can go to a regional arts council and get a grant to do that. This committee doesn't deal with the legacy fund, but I did want to give you one slide that shows you a little bit about that and point one thing out about it. We're really very thrilled and honored because we have been a recipient of Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund dollars for the first 4 years that fund existed. It's made a significant difference in the work that we were able to do, and it's made a significant impact. The one concern that we have, you'll see that the general fund dollars have been decreasing as those legacy fund dollars have become available. And since the Constitution talked about using legacy dollars to supplement instead of substitute for, we've been concerned about that. And so that's why we were really pleased that the governor is not proposing any decrease in general fund dollars this year. And we hope that the committee will be able to sustain the governor's recommendation. The last slide I wanted to share with you today is just, I love statistics. This is one of my favorites. Now, this takes into account everything that the Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils do, but when you add general fund dollars, when you add legacy dollars, when you look at the first biennia that legacy dollars were available, the programs that we funded touched about 25 million people. People of all ages, from 3 to 103, all over the state of Minnesota in all 87 counties. So $15 million out of the general fund may seem small to you, or $60 million totally out of all state revenue may seem small to you, but it has a significant impact. And we're really pleased to have the opportunity to help the state invest those dollars. That's my summary. I'm happy to answer any questions or provide any more detail that committee members might have.
Representative Kahn.
Two questions. The first one is, was there ever a proposal made to the regional arts councils or to the state's arts board for funding for an arts program in county fairs?
Madam Chair?
Ms. Jens.
Representative Kahn, I don't believe there was a proposal that came to us directly for that, no.
Okay. Then there was another
question.
Madam Chairman, another question that I had. If we were, you know, I know, and I'm actually talking from the point of view probably of the legacy, but it could be from this committee too. We generally don't give you directive appropriations. But if we were to think, for example, which many people have written to me suggesting, for example, that the decline, the loss of music in Minneapolis and St. Paul with the lockout of the orchestra and the lockout of the St. Paul Chamber, if we were to give a specific chunk of money to the state's arts board and say, use this for payments directly to musicians to organize concerts. Is that something you'd be able to handle? Either look for someone to be able to do it or do it yourselves or something like that.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, we always want to work with legislators when you have an idea about a priority or something that you think is important to do. We'd want to talk with you about what your expectations would be. The lockouts, we hope, are not going to be permanent. And as we're thinking about the next 2 years, we would hope that they would get resolved before then. And while those two organizations aren't playing, there are others that are. So we'd want to talk to you about what your concerns about lack of music would be,
well,
and what you'd like to accomplish.
No, I understand that, and we actually patronize a lot of organizations, not them. But you know, it has been a real void, though, in terms of the size. You know, I believe in smallness, too, but mm-hmm. in terms of the impact and in terms of the size and just in terms of the quality of the instruments. I don't think there's anyone in any small group who has a Stradivarius cello like Tony Ross does. But the point is, and I think one could craft language. So one of the possible solutions is, of course, that that what the board says is that they're falling way down in terms of the amount of money they need, which is why they had to wipe out their endowments to the point they did. So, thinking of a state appropriation that might either join with the boards in building up the endorsement, or a state appropriation that could go to something to replace the board and bring, because the concerts, obviously the concerts, I think there are two concerts in a school starting today which are going on. So there are venues that these musicians could play in and keep them in town and keep them going. So is that a possibility of something that we could think about?
Ms. Jens. Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, we certainly would want to talk with you about that, work with you again on what you'd like to accomplish and what the timeline might be for that.
Okay, great.
Lieutenant Colonel Howe.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know how to respond to that, but thank you. You know, and I think it's, Madam Chair, I think it's great that we develop, you know, that state spends money to develop artists and let them find where their talents really lie. But my question is, too, is when they get a grant to develop their talent and they produce something, and it's produced on those dollars, does the state own that? Do we get to put that in our own museum or history center, or what happens to that art that they create?
I'd imagine.
Ms. Jen. Madam Chair, Representative Howe, the state does not own any of the products that are funded from either the arts organizations or the individual artists. We are very concerned, though, that the state has a way to benefit from the funds that it invests. And so, since your question was about individual artists, I'll give you two examples. One is an author named Diane Wilson. Those of you who live in Minneapolis will know the book she wrote called Spirit Car. It was the 2012 One Minneapolis One Read book that was selected, and it's about her family's ties back to the U.S. Dakota War of 1862. And we gave her a very small grant, not to write that book, but we gave her a very small grant because she wanted to get better at character development. So we gave her $8,000. And then she turns around and writes a book like that. So the state benefits because we get the book that the artist then produces. And she's now, I think, on her second or third book. That was one of her early books. The other way that the state often benefits is that with our artist grants, which are all quite small, the most we'll ever provide for an individual artist grant is $10,000. We require that there be some kind of public interaction with whatever project comes out of it. So we funded a photographer named Lance Gellert, who did a photo exhibit of commemorating the 35W bridge collapse and the impact that it had on people's lives. And once he got the photo exhibit together, his plan was to show that at the Minnesota Historical Society and then also produce a book of those photographs. Or another artist who is a painter, but part of his project was to do a community painting project with young people in the Frogtown neighborhood in St. Paul. There always has to be a way that Minnesotans can engage with the artist. So we don't own the product, but we do benefit from their creativity and from the fruits of their labors.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got two or three questions. I guess the first would be, do you get a lot more applications for your grants than you have funds to distribute?
Madam Chair?
Ms. Jens.
Representative Benson, we do. The Arts Board is able to fund about 40% of the grant applications that we receive. As a system, it's about 50%.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, the next question, I guess, is how do you follow up with, I mean, I've got a list of a number of people that have received grants. How do you follow up, or how do the organizations, state organizations, follow up to ensure that, indeed, you mentioned the fact that there's got to be a public evidence of the artist's work. How do you follow up to do that? Because my next question will be about the legislative audit that was done that was released in September in terms of that.
Sure. Ms. Jen.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson. Every project or every grant that we make, there is a final report that's required, and so we receive a narrative report that describes what happened, and they also will provide a final accounting for the funds. And that's true for all of our grants, and it's also true for the Regional Arts Council grants. They require final reports. If it's a grant that's $50,000 or more, the state has a relatively new requirement that there is a monitoring visit, and that during the grant period we would go out and we would visit with the grantees and find out how they're doing on their project, how they're doing in achieving their outcomes.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The recommendations from the legislative auditor, I've got four bullets, and I don't know if you have those in front of you or not, but I can read them. Completing financial reconciliations and monitoring grantees to ensure compliance with state policies. So that's the reason why I asked that first one. So they have findings, you know, regarding that. So going forward, how will you tighten that up to make sure, indeed, that the monies are spent the way they're supposed to be?
Ms. Jens.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I don't have it in front of me, but I know that report very well. And we have a work plan to address the findings that were in that report. Part of what happened is in the first 2 years of the legacy funds, actually the very first year, some people sitting around this table will remember that year very clearly, that in 2009 the legislature appropriated the funds to all of the various agencies, and then all of us really started the planning of what we would do with the dollars and how we would administer them. And in the first 2 years, we were not able to increase our staff size sufficiently, so we had a hard time complying with those monitoring and reading the final reports as quickly as we needed to. We do have a plan for how we'll address them going forward, but staff capacity is an issue.
Madam Chair.
Representative Benson.
Thank you. Could we get a copy of the working report as far as how you will address those?
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, we can share our work plan with you.
Thank you. And the one last statement. The Rochester Symphony is alive and well, so I would invite you all down to Rochester. It's a fantastic symphony. My wife and I try to make as many of those as possible. Okay. And one last question. Do you have an idea in terms of where Minnesota ranks regarding the number of dollars spent on the arts per capita?
Ms. Jens.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, you must have been in my office yesterday when I was looking at a new report. As far as state dollars go, this is not private dollars, because we also have a significant amount of private philanthropy for the arts. But Minnesota is second in the amount of funding that it provides to the arts in the state. We're behind New York.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. Just so that the committee's aware, Minnesota is second in the nation in terms of the amount of money spent on the arts. Thank you.
And we should be first. Representative Benson, the Duluth Superior Orchestra is very, very available also.
Madam Chair, it sounds like you have a battle of the bands here.
Representative Swatsky.
Madam Chair, Ms. Jens, I'm happy to report that living here in St. Paul during the week, I went 100 miles west to enjoy the arts at the Bar Theater this weekend and saw She Loves Me. And so it was a treat to be able to go to the theater and be home in about 2.5 minutes rather than drive into, it's great down here, but a two-hour drive at the end of a night is not always fun. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Leidiger.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I should also then comment, even in Carver County, I guess there were two plays that you subsidized, although I think that really came from the legacy money. So, I mean, even in the country, it still comes through
them.
Well, my question, Madam Chair.
And the Regional Arts Council.
And the Regional Arts Councils, that's right. I wanted to go back to the legislative auditor's report, and again, I am concerned. I hear you're working on this, but that was the big finding, which was alluded to by Representative Benson, that the Minnesota State Arts Board did not effectively monitor grantees to ensure they use money granted from the state's general, federal, and arts and cultural heritage funds in accordance with the specific appropriations and grant agreements, which to me means then that the grantees, some of them were out using money totally differently than what they had come in with the proposal and application for. So there must have been a number of those. Do you know the number of those that were found in non-compliance that was found by the auditor? That was found by the auditor, because I don't see that in the report. And then again, I'd also like to see what you're doing about this.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair,
Ms. Jens,
Representative Leidiger. Just to be clear, the auditors didn't say that money was misused. The auditors said that we were not conducting monitoring visits and we were not processing the final reports in the amount of time that the state requires. We're supposed to process a final report within 30 days of receiving it. And in our case, there is a workload that makes it sometimes take longer than 30 days to finish the final report. So the auditors haven't reported that the funds were misused. What they found is that there are some state grants management policies that we were not able to comply with because it was taking us longer, or if we weren't able to go out and do a monitoring visit, we were relying on the final report rather than going out and seeing the work through the visit. But we will share the work plan with you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman and Ms. Jens, one of the things that's concerned me, particularly as we increase the burden with the legacy funds, is how organizations that have, like yours, that start out with the general fund base are dealing with the increased administrative costs that you have. Do you need some kind of and I know we've gone back and forth on how we do that with the additional legacy funds. Do you have any suggestions to us as to how we should do it?
Madam Chair?
Ms. Jens.
Representative Kahn. I don't know if it's a suggestion. I guess it's a request. The first 2 years of the legacy fund appropriations, there were caps or limits that were placed across all four of the funds, and they varied It was a percent or 2% or 5%, and I think the highest in some of the either Clean Water Outdoor Heritage was 8% of the funds were available for administrative costs. So that was the first 2 years. The second 2 years, all of those percentages or all those caps were taken out of the bills, and the language in the bill now says that administrative costs must be directly related to and necessary for, which leaves it up to agencies to decide what percentage of the funds need to be used for administrative purposes and then holds us all accountable to report back to you on how we're using those funds. So in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, where our dollars, and I know we're spending a lot of time on legacy today, but in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, there were 10 appropriations made, and only two of them still had caps. We had a cap, and the Department of Administration had a cap. The other 8 appropriations did not. And so I guess the request would be to be treated the same as the other agencies and to conform with the directly related to and necessary for language. And then we'll come back and tell you how we spent those dollars and how that's helped us with the compliance and the monitoring.
I guess, Sam Kahn.
Madam Chairman, the relation to the general fund appropriation is if we don't, if we give you extra money and we don't give you the means to spend it properly, then that has to come out of the general fund appropriation for the cost. And obviously it has to intermingle with the general fund appropriation anyway, because you do have people on. It doesn't make any sense to have a project in, I don't know, way out somewhere that's getting general fund appropriation, end of the world where those guys live, that has general fund appropriation, another one next door that may have a legacy fund appropriation and send two different monitoring efforts. So they do have to be intermingled in a way that makes sense.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, we do try to tie those together and use our resources as best we can. If there are two or three different projects that are close together, we try to schedule those visits together or combined resources whenever we can.
Representative Kahn, I don't like the word intermingle on this. And I expect maybe the legislative auditor doesn't either, but we'll go on.
If you want to, Madam Chairman, if you literally want two separate auditors going out to two next door grants, that's your opinion. But
yes, I don't want that, but I also don't want intermingling.
Well, think, Madam Chairman, I'll take any suggestion you have of a better coordination is maybe a better word.
But we'll do that in your committee.
Okay.
Any other things on the spreadsheet that Ms. Roberts prepared for us for the Arts Board? Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify or say anything about the Arts Board? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to say anything about the Amateur Sports Commission? Okay. Is there anyone on the committee that wishes to review the minutes of the 9th and 10th meeting?
I have reviewed them, and I would move their approval.
Representative Den moves approval of the 9th and 10th meeting minutes as printed. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Members, thank you. We got just a little bit behind today at the beginning. Now we're a little bit ahead. Next Monday is the next meeting, and we will have a meeting at 12:30 at our regular time, and that will be continued into the evening. And on Wednesday we have our regular meeting at 12:30, and that will continue into the evening. We are going to have all the overviews completed then in February.
Madam
Representative Detmer.
If we get our work done during the regular committee time, would that mean that we wouldn't have to meet in the evening?
Representative Detmer, I can't imagine that we could get our work done during the regular time because we have big agencies left for the most part. But
Madam, what if we do? What if
we were pretty efficient today.
My gosh, if we do schedule at least one of those nights, you can do whatever you want.
Okay. Thank, you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Represent Crenshaw.
I was just going to throw out there, Madam Chair, if we get done, maybe we could go to the orchestra on one of those nights together as a committee.
If only we had an orchestra.
Yeah, what orchestra?
Here. The trip to Rochester and the trip to Duluth, it's so long.
There is a Golden Valley Orchestra.
Oh. And they're performing on Monday and Wednesday?
I'll check on that and get back to you.
The view of the Minnesota Orchestra Board has been is that they could really be of the quality of the Golden Valley Orchestra, the Rochester, and the Duluth, which is kind of directly related.
What exactly are you saying about the quality of the Golden Valley Orchestra?
I'm saying that they're not paid. I actually know people who play it.
Me too.
Representative Detmer, were you giving me a hint that maybe I should redo my agenda a little bit?
Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we can probably speed up the process with the interviewing the different agencies, and then that will give us more time to get on with the business of the bills that we need to go through, important bills. And if we can get through the different agencies, more power to the committee.
Representative Detmer, do you have a little bit of time in the morning? So you and I, Mr. Marble and Ms. Connolly, can sit down and talk a little bit?
Please, yeah. I'll take that as an invitation.
Great. Let me know what time you're available. And this meeting is adjourned.